Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 7 of the Summer Library Podcast. I am Paul Sorrell, along with Stephen Mount. Mr. Mount, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Paul?
I am doing well.
Good.
And guess what?
What?
It's fall break.
Fall break.
Yes.
Woo!
The last time we talked, we had been in school just a couple of weeks, and now here we are at the middle of the semester.
Halftime.
I guess that just proves that time does fly when you're having fun.
I guess so.
So what's happening in your world?
Oh, you know, I read a book. You asked me last time if I was reading anything, and
I didn't have
an answer for you. But I've read two books since
then. Two books?
Then. Yes.
Wow.
What kind of book? I read a book, both from our recreational reading shelf in the library. I read a book on JFK by Stephen King.
Oh, yeah. That was a big book, too.
11/22/63. Yeah. That was a very interesting book. Very good. I think it was the first Stephen King book that I've read.
Okay. And what was that about?
It was... obviously Stephen King fiction, but they found a wormhole in time where they could go back, and an owner of a restaurant decided he would see what happens if he could try to prevent the murder of JFK.
Oh, wow.
All that would change and affect.
Yeah. And what was the outcome? JFK lives.
You're going to have to read the book to find out.
What was the other book you read?
The other book I read was about Tony La Russa, called One Last Strike.
Yes.
It was a book he wrote last year on the Cardinals championship and kind of his career managing. And it was very interesting if you are a Cardinals fan.
Yes. And speaking of the Cardinals.
Oh, yes. Yes.
They're in the playoffs.
We're back in the playoffs.
Yeah. And as well as the Yankees.
Yankees are in. Your team, the Yankees.
Absolutely.
We could face each other in the
World Series. That would be wonderful. That would be cool.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will happen. But they have to get past this round and the next round.
A couple more steps to go.
Yeah. But, you know, it could happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
The 1964 series? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But they met before in the World Series.
Yeah, they have. Probably a couple of times.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're not historians. I don't know.
We're just, I'm a casual. You're more of a fan than I am.
Well,
you know these things. That's your next assignment, to look these up.
I'll do a little research.
Yeah.
Maybe find a research coach to help me with.
There you go. Look at you, throwing all those library things in there. Yeah. And speaking of the library, all sorts of stuff going on in there.
Yeah. Yeah, we have, I don't know who all is familiar. We've had it up for a while, but we are social medialized. I believe that's a...
Is that a word?
Official term, yes. We have a blog, we have a Facebook, we have a Twitter.
Wow.
All kinds of stuff.
What is it? What is this new one? Pinterest? Is that it? What is that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's more for girls.
I'm glad I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want me to give that information out now?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Blog. We can put this on this blog post that we put on our blog.
Right. This is how we want people to...
Yeah. You can actually link to it from the library's website, but the library's blog website is summerlibrary.blogspot.com.
And summer spelled with an...
With an A. Mm-hmm. Facebook, you can find us at Summer Library. UU Twitter is at UU_library. So that's our social media, how you can hook up with us.
All right.
Yeah.
And Ellen Kimbrough has been doing our blog.
She's our blogger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing a great job.
Yeah.
Very informative. A couple have been about our library website and research guides. Research guides are a very useful tool.
Yes. And probably underappreciated.
Underutilized.
Or underutilized. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're separated by subject. If you're researching a subject on science or math or whatever, and you want to find what databases have those particular journals, you can find that. You can find more information than that, books on that, and all the information you need for research on that topic.
And Ellen's doing a great job keeping that up to date and very informative. And, of course, she is a journalist.
Yes.
And she used to work for the Jackson Sun, and so... She has really done a really good job with that.
Evening librarian.
Yes, that's Ellen Kimbrough. So, and another thing with the library, it's the Renewing Minds Library Capital Campaign.
And for our new library.
For our new library, yes, sir. And There is a deadline for anyone who hasn't given and who would like to contribute to the cause
and be matched.
The deadline to be matched is December 31st, 2012.
This year.
So you can double your pledge. Well, you can double the money that you pledge. So
right.
If you pledge $5, $10 will be given total. So that's coming up. Now, you don't have to necessarily pay by December 31st,
right.
2012. You have an additional 2 years to pay that. But for the funds to be matched, that deadline is, again, December 31st, 2012. And there are ways that you can pay. You can just send a check. You can put it on your credit card. If you're an employee, you can have it deducted from your payroll. And I think you have an address people can send that information.
Yeah, it's just off the library website. So it's www.uu.edu/library/renewingminds, all together, one word. And it'll give you information. Find information about the new library, possible floor plans. There's a link that's Avenues for Giving, so you can see kind of some of your options there for giving. But that'll give you a lot of information about the new library and how to possibly give that way.
So we encourage anyone who would like to give to the new library to do that. And you can find a lot more information on that website that Stephen has just told us about.
Oh, Paul.
Oh, yes.
I've heard you've been up to some...
I've been up to no good.
Extracurricular activities?
I've been up to trouble. That's what it is. Yes.
No. Yeah, tell us about what you are...
Well, actually, I am in a show.
What show is that?
I am in The Music Man, which is being produced by the Dixie Carter Performing Arts Center in Huntington. It's a part of their community theater called the Dixie Players.
And you are playing...
I am playing Harold Hill.
Harold Hill, the lead.
The lead. Yeah. I played Harold Hill nearly 13 years ago with Nightlight Theater in Trenton, and I have always liked that show since then. And I am just really honored to have been given the role. And I have been going up to Huntington several times a week and being sleep deprived.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm definitely.
You're going
to
come.
I'm going to come watch you.
Really?
Be the Music Man.
Well, thank you. Well, you got trouble.
Yeah.
Back,
what dates?
It's going to be November 9th and 10th and 16th and 17th. It's a Friday and Saturday, and the Friday night performances are at 7, and the Saturday performances are at 2.
Okay. Tickets at the door, or do you know if there's a website?
Yeah, I think it's dixiepack.net or something like that.
Okay. Google it.
Just Google Dixie Carter Performing Arts Center, and you'll find information.
All right.
And in a few weeks, we have something else that affects us all, the presidential election.
Just had the first debate.
Yeah.
A few days ago.
Yeah. How many more do they have,
I think there's 3 total and 1 VP debate.
Okay. And then,
I believe.
And then this long, winding road will finally come to a merciful end.
Yeah. And then we can start our 2016 presidential.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe 6 weeks after the inauguration, we'll start hearing about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see the results of that.
Yes, it will. And we have a display up of campaign buttons and other things up in the hallway right outside of the library. The Jenny Lowry, came.
Not just a Jenny Lowry.
No, but the Jenny came and let us know that we had a lot of these campaign buttons that someone had given the library, and they were in the archives. And her student worker put a nice display of those up, and then Lori Haney and I put some other things together, and it's quite colorful.
There's some historical books on past elections, right?
Yeah. So if you're into politics and elections and things like that, please check out our display. If you're not, please check out our display. So we have a special guest today, Dr. Tom Rosebrough. He is here to talk to us about education and technology and transformational teaching and things about that.
And he's an expert in that
field.
He's taught in every level. And
should
be very informative.
Yes, and we're looking forward to meeting and speaking with him, and we will be back with that interview right after this. Dr. Tom Rosebrough is Executive Dean of the College of Education and Human Studies and Professor of Education here at Union. A graduate of The Ohio State University, Dr. Rosebrough has taught at all levels from elementary school through college and in both public and private settings. He publishes and presents regularly on the local, state, national, and international levels and has been a contributor to two books, Shaping a Christian Worldview, The Foundations of Christian Higher Education, and Faith and Learning, a Handbook for Christian Higher Education. In 2011, he co-authored with Union professor Ralph Leverett the book Transformational Teaching in the Information Age. Dr. Rosebrough's interests include pedagogy, educational philosophy and ethics, and the history of education. We are pleased to have Dr. Rosebrough on our podcast today. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul. Good to be here.
We're glad to have you. Now, what motivated you to make education your profession, and at what age did you kind of know that that's what you wanted to do with your life?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. It was probably generated early on through my mother's interest in education. Education was always seen as a calling in my family, and that hasn't changed in my life. I think education is the essential profession that everyone needs a good teacher. And I think teachers are special people, especially the great teachers are special people. And that was probably inbred in my family through my mother more than anyone else.
Now, was anyone else in your family in the teaching profession at all?
No. No. That's a real good question. First time anyone has asked me that question.
Mm-hmm. So when you were preparing to teach, I mean, was that your focus when you went to college and when you were in high school, maybe thinking about college, or was there some room for, you know, self-examination? What do I want to do with my life? Or was that just always there?
I think I always knew that I would be in education, that I would be in the classroom in some way. But in my undergraduate days at Ohio State, I majored in history. And that also probably came from my mother as well. I didn't know I was going to be here to talk about my mother today. You can edit this if you like. But she had a profound love for history, especially as it related to people of history. And my connection to the classroom is through people and through relationships, and certainly that's what inspired transformational teaching, because I see teaching and teachers as in the business of transforming the lives of people through education.
Right, right. Now, obviously, you've been in the game for a while, and you have seen things change within the educational system. So in your opinion, where are we as a country in regards to the educational strength compared to other developed countries? Because we always hear these statistics about how the United States ranks against some of these other countries, and it seems that we're not where we should be. And how did we get there?
Well, I think by just about any measure, no matter which side of the political fence you're on or which side of educational ideology you're on, this country is in crisis in education. And I think we've been moving there over the last 30, 40, 50 years. This has not just happened overnight. And I think that the indicators that you see with world rankings, you know, you look at the Exxon commercials that are running on television right now that have us far down the list in science, for example, in comparison to a number of other countries, should be a real warning sign for us in where we are. I think we can put too much into that. I think we can overreact. I think we need to react, but that we need to react in a more proactive way and try to understand what has made education great mm-hmm. in this country mm-hmm. In the past, in the present, right. but also what we're at risk for in the future. Education is a very complex business,
right.
and I think what's occurring in the world right now is perhaps more than any other time in education is the influence of technology.
Right.
And technology in a general sense is the application of science to practical affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a time where we want to use science rather exclusively mm-hmm. in education. And mm-hmm. I think that can be problematic
mm-hmm.
because education is both art and science.
Right.
And in the end, education is about people,
mm-hmm.
about changing the lives of people. And so we have to understand what technology is and what it does,
mm-hmm.
how it can benefit us,
right.
what it's useful for,
right.
and what it and how it does not benefit us and achieve some kind of a balance.
Okay. So would you say the tipping point has been technology, or has it been something else? Now, some would argue possibly when you took prayer out of the school, or when you lessened the role of the spiritual part of the student or the individual, that had something to do with the degradation of the educational system. Or is it that simple? Or is it, like you said, it's very complex?
Well, I think it is very complex. I think the tipping point, if to use your phrase, over the last 50 years has been the impact of diversity.
Mm.
And diversity comes in many different forms. It's social, it's economic, it's technological. I think things have changed in the last 50 years in American education, and we have not responded to it in the way that we need to mm-hmm. at this point. I think one thought perhaps to hold on to is that the great teachers that you and I have had who have influenced our lives, that mm-hmm. if we put those teachers in our mind's eye and think about them, that we need to honestly ask, would they succeed in today's schools?
Mm.
And I think one of the conclusions that we might have to come to is that many of them would not because of the demands of diversity. Back to technology, I think that when we think of technology now, we think of computers.
Mm-hmm.
But technology has influenced education for a long time, and one of the things that we document in transformational teaching is the advent of the printing press,
right.
which occurred quite a while ago,
mm-hmm.
1400s, Gutenberg. The printing press was the first mass communication technology that actually changed education, because before then, the only one that had a textbook, that had a book, was the teacher,
mm-hmm.
and the lecture method was born because of that.
Right.
And then we spent the next couple hundred years in education behaving as though the printing press didn't exist and still relied upon the lecture method as the primary pedagogy to teach classes. Mm-hmm. And in some ways that we still tend
right.
to do that. But other technologies, the motion picture,
mm-hmm.
Video, television certainly
mm-hmm.
have impacted education. The same people that were asking, is television going to replace teachers
mm-hmm.
are also asking now, are computers going to replace teachers? And while the question is understandable, I think it's wrongheaded. Of course, computers are not going to replace teachers. If technology is a practical application of science, that infers that technology is a process or a method or an instrument. And in the hands of great teachers, mm-hmm. technology is a wonderful tool.
Right.
And so, for example, in in classrooms today where students have great access to technology, even if it's with smartphones or with tablets or with laptops or with whiteboards. There is a great opportunity for teachers to use the internet for topical research to actually help students learn how to think, mm-hmm. which I think is where we should be going with advancing American education in the world today anyway.
Because not everyone learns the same way. And if the standard has been lecture only, and then maybe some people don't respond to that. So other things, working in groups or using hands to do things with technology or whatever. And I guess that is kind of a difficult thing to incorporate into the classroom when you have so many different styles of learning. And how does one know? How does a teacher know what's the best approach to that? Or do they know? Is that just something that you just have to be in the classroom and kind of figure out and cater to who's in your room?
Well, you can figure it out. And I think technology helps us with that now. The other thing besides diversity that I mentioned earlier that has changed education in the last 50 years, and particularly in the first part of this century, is standardized testing.
Mm-hmm.
And standardized testing uses the technologies of the day in order to pinpoint problems. The difficulty that I see is that policymakers and schools are not using those assessment results for diagnostic purposes. There's a difference between diagnosis and summative assessment.
Mm-hmm.
The assessment that's being used today is rather punitive in its use instead
right.
of diagnostic in
mm-hmm.
its use.
Mm-hmm.
If we ever get around to the point of allowing technological assessment instruments to pinpoint the problems that our students have in learning for our teachers so that our teachers can use those use that data
right.
to intervene,
mm-hmm.
then we're really on to something.
Mm-hmm.
The great diversity that we have in our classroom becomes a bit less of a problem because we are able to diagnose the needs that are there. It's still a very difficult job because the diagnosis of problems is more than just data on a spreadsheet. We're
sure.
talking about the life, the motivations, the
right.
interest, even the spiritual potential, if you will, of individual learners.
Right, right.
What should teachers look at other than standardized tests to tell, how the student's performing?
They should look into the eyes of their individual students and form a relationship. One of the things that we talk about is that teachers need to not only be scholars and practitioners, but they need to be relators. They need to focus on the relationship, the pedagogical relationship that they have with that particular student and figure out what it is that makes that individual student tick spiritually. I think there was a time in education where meeting social goals as well as academic goals included the spiritual dimension. But I think here in the 21st century that we need to separate the spiritual dimension from social and for emphasis so that we understand that the illumination of the human spirit is the real goal of education, that we want to meet the needs of individual students by understanding that there is human potential spiritually in every person. And that's the real purpose of education and
sure.
always has been. I'm just afraid that it gets lost sometimes in the technological world that, that we live in now.
Yeah, if somebody were to come to you and ask for the action steps they needed to take to affect students in that way, to look in their eyes and to spend time with them, what are there specific steps you would recommend?
Well, I think in the classroom that if you think of the action steps that a teacher takes, a teacher wants to teach students to think. A teacher wants to be able to correct, but those can be done in a technological way. Those can be done online, for example. But when you get into the more human dimensions of really listening, the art of listening itself, it's more than reading words on a page. In laughing, in loving, I think those five dimensions of thinking, correcting, listening, laughing, and loving are all pretty much sum up the dimension that a teacher has to convey in a classroom. It is not narrow. It is broad, and it is deep. And I think we make a big mistake when we want to pretend that education is about information instead of transformation.
How big of a problem is the breakdown of the family in the educational system? I was listening to a speech you were giving, I think, at a conference last September, and you were in Memphis. And, of course, Memphis Public Schools, you know, I'm sure as any other public school system, has a myriad of problems. But it seems like a lot of times success cannot be achieved because there is no support from the family or from the home. And these kids are coming to classes and to school already behind the eight ball, so to speak. I mean, what impact is that having on education in the United States?
Well, I think it has a huge impact. I think the traditional family in the United States is experiencing a tremendous breakdown. I think we see that not just in education but across other fields as well. I think we see it first in education, though, mm-hmm. and we don't give teachers enough credit for having to cope with the social, emotional, and spiritual issues that the disintegration of the family structure brings. We give an example in the book of a 6-year-old little girl who, and it comes from real experience of a teacher in an urban setting. The teacher was having difficulty with the little girl because the little girl was one of five children of a 19-year-old single mom, and she was the oldest. And she, by the time she was six, she had learned to be the boss, if you will, of the family. And so she came to school with a certain social, emotional, spiritual mindset that was problematic. She and the teacher were having difficulty communicating on who the authority figure was in the classroom, for example. And the teacher just finally took the little girl for a walk around the football field there at the school, and they just talked about life and talked about family and siblings and authority and teachers and mothers and dads. And it's not to say it was all better after that, but it was just to say that the teacher made an effort to establish a relationship with that little girl that began to make a constructive impact upon the life of that little girl so that she could better understand the big picture. And that's maybe a rather extreme example, if you will, but it is a microcosm of the kind of social and emotional issues that teachers have to deal with in today's class, classrooms and the demands that are that are put upon them to help students learn.
Right, right. In the classroom, as we discussed earlier, technology is becoming more and more evident in the use of it. Would it be fair to say that those who don't have access to technology are already going to be falling behind? Or is public school doing a good job to outfit the classroom in technology and to make sure that everyone has a level playing field in regard to that?
Oh, I think American schools are plugged into technology now. I think a younger generation of teachers is coming to the front who have less fear of technology and are able to use what is there in the school. Certainly schools can be better equipped with technology to meet the needs of their students. We're not there and probably never will be there. It's a very expensive endeavor. But if teachers just focus on the basics of allowing access to information and then turning that information into knowledge through the use of guided inquiry, they can make a great impact in any classroom, regardless of the sophistication of whatever technology exists in that particular school. I think it begins to be a bit of a cop out if you blame the lack of technology or access to it. Technology is everywhere now. People, I hardly know of any adult that walks around between the ages of 20 and 60 that doesn't have a smartphone. Smartphone is a small computer that gives you instant access and customized knowledge.
Right.
And that access and customization can be used in the classroom. But it needs to be used in the right way. The role of the teacher, thankfully, is changing. After 500 or 600 years, we talked about the Middle Ages and the lecture method and so on, which still holds sway among a number of people. But finally, teachers are beginning to be seen as real facilitators of instruction, to where they can turn learning over to learners and get learners to ask questions, seek information, do topical research on the internet in large groups, in small groups, as individuals, be accountable, learn to do problem solving. One of the things that has to be done is that we have to focus less on teaching to the test and and interpreting test scores and more on teaching kids to be problem solvers. And we get all mixed up about that, and my view is that we just have a tendency in this political world especially to focus on soundbite answers and test scores are soundbites. But they're much too simple to rely upon, and they're much too information age based, and I'm more into the transformation in education that can come through teaching kids how to think and problem solve.
Right.
Has technology, when it comes into the classroom, is it always an improvement? Does technology equal improvement? Does it prove to be maybe a distraction or an impediment in any way to learning?
Well, I think the question has been asked, is Google making us stupid? Is social media making us shallow? And I think the tendency is there. I think there are a lot of folks walking around that think they know, but when you probe a little more deeply, they really don't know at all. And that's, to me, the biggest crisis that we have in American education, that it's a mile wide and an inch deep, and that the only way that you can solve that is by having great teachers who ask great questions, who probe, who challenge students and demand that they be accountable for their own learning. So, yes, technology, like anything else that is good, can and I mentioned the printing press, motion pictures, television is technology. Those can be good things, but they can also be detriments if they are used in the wrong way. And certainly we see in the digital age, the information age that we're in, the technological age that we're in, that computers are sometimes used very well and sometimes used very badly. And it just depends on whose hands they are in. And that's why it's more important than ever that we have good teachers, good in every sense of the word, who have the best interests of their students in mind and have the big picture of what education really is.
So what is your hope for the future of the educational system?
Well, my hope is that we will, first of all, begin to stop thinking that education is a simple business, that it's a matter of an Exxon commercial that ranks us according to test scores across the world, and that the only thing that has to be done is teach teachers to have a deeper knowledge of their subject, and that's it. Not to pick on Exxon or anybody else here in this podcast, but that's what you tend to read in the popular press, that the problem that we have with our teachers is that they just don't know enough, and we need to have higher standards for our teachers. In some cases, of course, it's true that they don't know enough. They don't have the kind of deep knowledge that they need. But we all have been victims of teachers and professors, if you will, in classes that have a deep knowledge you can't teach.
Right.
And so that's why we emphasize that we want the teacher to be a scholar, but also a practitioner and a relator. And so my hope is that in the future we will look at education in a more holistic way, that we will put the learner in the center of the pedagogical framework, that it's the learner's needs, that education begins with the learner and certainly involves the teacher and the curriculum. Those are the three parts of any classroom, but it's a synergy between those three, and that we begin to understand that all of us as learners need to be challenged to our potential in every way.
Yes.
And I think we have lost sight of that in this country, I hope temporarily, and so my hope is that we will gain a more holistic kind of picture of what education should be about.
Right. Well, Tom, we appreciate your time, and this has been kind of a heavy subject, which is okay, so I want to lighten it up right before we leave.
I'm ready for that.
Okay. So how are your Buckeyes doing?
You know, the Buckeyes are 5-0 this year.
Are you happy with Urban Meyer and the choice for him to be the coach?
Well, you know, until he loses to Michigan, you know.
And, that's the
and hopefully that won't occur for another dozen years or so.
You have a pretty good quarterback this year.
We do. He's a tremendous athlete, and it's been fun to watch. The game that I watched the other night with Nebraska was probably the most fun that I've had in about a decade, and just enjoying the fact that the Buckeyes had an offense, and just because they were down a few points, they could actually score points. You know? So
that's always encouraging.
Yeah.
Well, very good. And again, we thank you for joining us, and we wish you a nice fall break.
Thank you.
We are on the day before fall break.
We're ready, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yes. We are. And it feels like fall outside, so that'll make it even better. So we will be back right after this. We'd like to thank our guest, Dr. Tom Rosebrough, for joining us today. A lot of information there, and he's hopeful for the future, and that's good. So we want to be hopeful, especially about education, because it's such an important part of the fabric of our country. And so, Stephen, do you have any plans for fall break?
I might mow the yard.
Wow, that's exciting.
That's about it. What about you?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to be learning lines. Yeah, that'll be exciting.
Yeah,
too.
That'll be fun.
Well, we want to wish everyone a happy fall break and hope you have a safe and enjoyable time off. And we want to thank you for listening. And we will be back sometime in the future with another podcast. And you all take care.